Okay, folks, my name is Molly Marin. I am the webinar coordinator for the New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. We have several upcoming professional development opportunities available to you, and more information can be found on our webpage at nysrti.org. Also, a copy of today's PowerPoint can be found on our webpage under Professional Development and then under Webinars. At the end of today's webinar, we'll post a link to a brief evaluation, and if you could please take a few minutes to respond, we very much appreciate that feedback. During today's presentation, please use the chat box for any questions or comments that you may have. We are very pleased to have back with us today Dr. Allison Boardman. She will be presenting the fourth webinar in our Strand 12 series, Implementing Collaborative Strategic Reading in Grades 4 through 12. Today's topic is Wrap-Up. Dr. Allison Boardman is an assistant research professor in the School of Education at the University of Colorado Boulder, where she teaches courses on differentiating instruction. She conducts research and works with school districts across the country to improve students' reading comprehension and English language proficiency in general education settings. She has written books and numerous articles on teaching reading comprehension. And at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome back Dr. Allison Boardman.
Hello there, and welcome. I know everyone is probably getting ready for Thanksgiving, either in actual practice or in your minds, but it's great to have you here. And I'm looking at the list, and I notice quite a few names that I have seen from previous webinars. If you're on for the first time and you have not been to one of the previous CSR webinars, please just use the chat feature and let me know what grade and content you teach, or if you're an ESL teacher, special ed teacher, et cetera. That would be great to know. Today, we are going to review Get the Gist. If you had the chance to try Get the Gist in your classroom, I'll be taking some questions and about how it went. It'd be great to be able to debrief that a little bit so that I can give you some tips if that would be helpful. And then we'll get into the wrap-up, or the strategies that come after students have completed reading the text in a CSR lesson. And as we've been doing for the past webinars, I will end with just a review of the resources that are available to support wrap-up and also your CSR instruction in general. So I don't see anybody typing, which is making me think that everybody has been here before, and I do think I recognize all the names. So welcome back, and here we go. So in CSR, we have the preview that happens once before reading, and then the teacher is going to break the text into 2 to 3 sections, and the kids will work together reading section by section. So they will read one section in a small group out loud. They will individually identify words or concepts that are unclear to them, and they will work through the fix-up strategies and discuss what those words and concepts might mean, and then put them back into the text to make sure they make sense. After doing that, students get the gist, which is finding the main idea of that short section. They do that by talking with one another just for a little bit to see if they can agree on the most important who or what. And then they independently write their individual gists. And then they share and discuss the gists and see if they can come to some agreement about what is most important in the text. After they do that, they cycle through one section, click and clunk, get the gist, the next section, etc. And then when they're all done, they get to the wrap-up. So they have completed the hard work of reading the text. And I will say that kids really enjoy writing the questions, and probably even more than writing them, they really enjoy asking them to one another. It is a part of CSR where they can really have some deep and authentic connections to the text, or discussions, and make some connections to the text. And then they review and summarize what they've learned, and the teacher brings the kids back together. So that's where we will focus today. But I do want to do just a quick run through of the key materials in CSR to make sure that we're all on the same page. So kids will use a learning log each time. And this is not a worksheet. So when your students are going through the CSR process, if you look at them and you get the feeling that they're filling out a worksheet without a lot of discussion, without a lot of thinking, without using their role cards, something isn't quite right and the process is not where it needs to be. So it should feel more like a record of learning than like a worksheet as kids are going through the process. They use these expert role cards. These are wonderful because they increase student participation. Everybody has a job that's important to the group, and everybody is responsible for doing all of the strategies, except there's one person at a time who is leading or facilitating the process. And the words on the role cards really guide the kids through the process, knowing when is it time to think and write independently, and when is it time to share and discuss. And these cards can certainly be adapted. If you're using them with younger students, you probably want fewer words on the card, and it's perfectly okay to adapt these to meet the needs of your individual students. So preview, as you know, I'm just doing a quick run through of where we are. So the teacher states the topic, the kids brainstorm. This is really the introduction to the reading. And then click and clunk, we discussed. This is our metacognitive strategy, really helping kids understand when does my understanding break down and what can I do about it. Get the gist is where the kids are digging into that text to try to figure out what does it really mean? What is the essence of this section? And then they write it in, you know, about 10 to 15 words. So it's not a retell of everything that happened, but it is a synthesis of the key information in a section. So what do you think? If you happen to have a chance to try Get the Gist in your classroom, how did it go? What questions do you have? You might even share something that worked well if you tried something that you'd like to share. So I'll just stop talking for a few seconds and see if people are writing, and if not, that's okay, I will move on. And while Melissa is typing, maybe I'll give a couple of Get the Gist reminders. One of the things to check is that when you're giving your feedback to the students, that their gists really are staying with the text and capturing the most important information. But if they're in their discussions, they may go beyond the text. They may start to talk about things that are important or that matter to them or connections that they make. And you don't have to be worried about those conversations, but you do want to check with students to make sure they can distinguish between what's in the text and what kinds of connections they're making that might be outside of the text. And Melissa is asking, should students individually write a gist first or come up with a gist together as a group? And I'm so glad you asked that question. It really is important. And throughout the years, teachers have had different ideas about this. So what I can tell you is that when kids are discussing together before writing, it can be a productive discussion, and it can be a time where different ideas are heard and the kids work together. Unfortunately, what seems to happen more often than not is that one kid will sort of work out the gist, and whether it's right or wrong, everybody will start to co-construct a gist around that idea that one student has provided. And so it could be very detail-focused or very general, but they kind of run with the idea of one person. The other thing that happens is that the kids don't feel the same responsibility. They don't take the credit in the same way for having their own original ideas. So if they have discussed too much prior to writing, when it comes time to write, they'll say something like, Susan, what do you have? What did you have? What did we write? What did we think of? And then they just kind of copy from one another. So the way the cue cards are designed and the way that we suggest you do it is that there's a very brief discussion prior to writing. And the brief discussion is around what is the most important who or what in this section. And you can even have the kids, and the cue cards guides them in this way, to talk a little bit about why that's most important. So we gave the example in the webinar last time of the reading of peptic ulcers. And you could see that if peptic ulcers was the most important what, which I think it was, most of us agreed, it comes up a lot in the section. They keep talking about it over and over. And that little mini discussion of just agreeing on the most important who or what is often, I would say almost always, enough to get kids on the right track. So the way to do it is have them briefly identify and have a quick discussion about what is the most important who or what, and then silently and independently everybody writes their own gist, and the gist must somewhere contain the most important who or what. If your students need additional scaffolding, they can discuss, or you can discuss as a group, the key information in the section. So they can discuss those two things. They can identify the most important who or what, and then they can identify some key information or key details, and then they stop and write together silently and independently, and then they come back and discuss. And what you can also do if you want, if you have time at the end, is the kids can then revise their gists and come up with one super gist. So that takes a little bit of time, but if a group finishes early, or if it's a difficult section, or if you want them to really develop like that really excellent gist, that's another way that they can follow up with more discussion to really get that, you know, super gist right at the end that they've all worked on together. But that would come after everybody writing their individual gist. And we have another question, and as soon as it comes up, I will... and maybe it won't come up, but if you... Okay, so Robert is asking, how do you determine the length of a section of text? So it really depends on your students. The goal is that kids are reading enough text that it is, that they're learning from text. There's enough information in there. Generally, we think of a CSR lesson as taking about a class period, so about 50 minutes. It can take longer. And if you recall, and it should be in your resources, the Earth Friendly Fabrics is one page, pretty full page of text, and a teacher and her seventh grade students read that text in about 45 minutes. So they went through the entire CSR process. They'd been using CSR for several months. So it's usually about a page to two pages if it is informational text. So it could be like a one big section in your textbook, or if you're choosing something online, it could be a couple of paragraphs per section. For younger kids, it might in the beginning just be one paragraph per section. So if kids start to have gists that really don't capture all of the information in a section, that's a good hint that your sections might be too long. Another thing you can do to make sure that the kids are having enough length in their reading is you could read part of it together, or groups could read part of it together, and but not go through all the CSR steps. So you might do the preview, have your students read a section together, and then do click and clunk and get the gist for the final two sections. So if you're having some time issues, you can play around with that a little bit. But it's about the same amount that you would read in one class period. And also, if you use fiction, so if you're in a novel, since the main ideas hang together usually pretty well, then you can have kids reading a longer section. And Joanna asks, she has introduced a role, GPS. The job is to keep the discussion on topic and keep the group from going off road. I love that. So GPS, like what you use in your car, that's great. We used to, a while ago, we played around with the timekeeper role, And then we incorporated that timekeeper role into the leader role. But I think the GPS tracker, the person who keeps the group going and on task, is a wonderful role to have. Thank you for sharing that. Great idea. All right, so we're into the wrap-up. There are two pieces to wrap up: question generation and the review. And one thing I'll just get out of the way right from the start is that often people are concerned about whether or not the teacher can ask questions. So the teacher can always ask questions. So teachers have questions they want to ask. They want to assess learning. They want to help the kids make some big connections. Those questions are just fine to ask. But we also really want the kids to ask their own questions, and in a second you'll see why. So wrap up once after reading. So why are we doing having the kids ask their own questions? As kids are asking questions, it's helping them to identify main ideas, to summarize text, to monitor their understanding. So if you have to write a question about something, you may have to reread it to make sure it makes sense to you. So it is a good way to figure out, what did I really get about what I just wrote? You're integrating information from different parts of the text, so that is requiring some synthesis. There are higher level thinking skills at play. So you're also going outside of the text a little bit when you're making connections and making inferences. Those are often the why type questions. And it's helping you remember what you read. Here we are once again going back to the text, looking for evidence, rehearsing what we have learned already. And the review is also key. It can help the teacher have a feel for whether or not kids really got the big ideas. And when we get to asking students to justify their responses, I think that's the most powerful part of the review, is having the kids really be able to make an argument verbally. Why did you think that that was the most important part of the text? What was the indication? What is the evidence that what you wrote captures the big ideas? A note about question writing. So the story is this. Kids can ask different types of questions during the CSR questioning. And your kids may already be asking questions while they're reading. And if they are, that's wonderful. The type of questions I'm going to show you today are question-answer relationship questions. And Taffy Raphael is the person who has introduced these to us. And actually, she has four types of questions, and I'll tell you why we don't use the fourth one in CSR. But whether or not you use QAR or you use Bloom's taxonomy to help kids develop a range of questions, or whether you stick with question words and have kids write a variety from what questions to how questions to why questions, what's really important to understand is not the intricacy of one type of question over another. What we want is for kids to be writing lots of different kinds of questions. So we want them to be writing some factual questions, and we also want them to be writing some synthesis questions, as well as questions that are requiring inferences or connections. So that range of questions and the types of cognitive skills that are required are more important than whether you use QAR or a different questioning method. The right there question, the question and answer is right there in the text. And we use hand signals. A teacher did this in her classroom once, and I loved it so much I've been teaching people to do it ever since. So when she introduced the right there question, or she wants to signal to her students that they're going to write a right there question, she does with her finger just what I have done in that funny little picture that you're looking at. The question and the answer is right there in one place in your text. The next type of question, think and search. The answer is found in more than one place in the text, and you see me pointing to two different places. And again, I do just that with students when I introduce it to them. In order to answer a think and search question, you need to look in different parts of the reading to find the answer. And sometimes I also tell kids, these are teachers' favorite kind of questions. These are often the types of hard questions that teachers will put on a quiz or a test, those ones that really make you put different kinds of information together to get the answer. The third question type is author and you. So you can see me there pointing to my head and in the book. So sometimes you can answer an author and you without reading the text, but really your answer will be much richer for the knowledge that you have gained by reading the text. So these are questions that are asking you to, you know, what would you do if you were in a similar situation to the person that we just read about? How does what we read about today relate to what we learned last week? These are the kinds of questions that would come out in an author and you. For the QAR, Taffy Raphael, they have a fourth question type, and that's an on your own. And the on your own questions really take you outside. It's like, what ideas were sparked by reading this text? Those are great questions. They're important for critical thinking. But for students who are struggling readers and who are really trying to zero in on what is inside the text and digging out the meaning, it can sometimes stray them to have them go way outside the text. And those are exactly the kind of distractor questions that you see on standardized assessments. And kids will pick those questions out and often get the wrong answer because it's something that you know already that's related, but it isn't what you just read about. So if kids ask those kinds of questions, you can put them in a parking lot. You can answer them later or look them up on the internet, but I don't suggest that you focus on those kinds of questions during CSR. So here is a little arrow with Bloom's taxonomy, and what we did was we analyzed the discourse in a number of classrooms. So what is it that kids were talking about during the different components of CSR, and where did those conversations fall in terms of Bloom's taxonomy? And you can see that Click and Clunk, you're probably not surprised, appears in defining and clarifying, and Get the Gist in summarizing and comparing and justifying. But the imagine, the justify, and compare, that's where we see questioning. So questioning really appears in the upper levels of Bloom's taxonomy and really has the potential to push kids to think deeply about what they are learning. So let's watch a video of some kids asking some questions and answering them with CSR. Okay. So those were some kids asking questions, and they were calling their questions level 1, level 2, and level 3, but they were the same factual and think and search and author and you. And one of the things I hope that you noticed, I'm looking at Robert's question, and I'm going to answer quickly before I say what I hope you noticed. Are students encouraged to reread the text to create their questions? And the answer is yes. In fact, that's exactly what they do. So in the video, you can't really see them creating their questions. We fast forward that part, but they will go back and do quite a bit of rereading in order to come up with their questions. So thanks for asking that. And also to answer them. So anytime we have kids, like sometimes teachers like to have kids walk around the room to ask and answer questions, almost like a speed dating, you know, just it's at the end of the lesson, it's a way to get kids up. They have to bring their questions with them as well as their text, so whatever the text is, so they can look for the answers. Similarly, kids always write the answer when they write the question. And I'll show you some examples in a minute, but what we have found is it helps kids write a better question when they have written the answer, and it also helps them evaluate the answers that other kids give them. So how can you judge if something is right or wrong if you haven't really thought through the answer? So the typical way it works is that the kids will ask the question, then they'll kind of, everybody will have a discussion, and then as we saw with Rudy, at the end he came back with his answer, his version of what the correct answer was. And I wanted to point out that that Rudy, the boy we're looking at right now, is a student with a learning disability, and prior to the class taking up CSR, he really didn't participate much, if at all, in the lessons. I mean, he was very, very quiet. He often didn't complete whatever the writing task or the reading task would be too difficult for him. So even though we see, compared to the other three kids in the class, that he is participating a little bit less, he has written his questions and his answers. He reads his question, he listens to the students, and then he gives his answer. And so his participation really is it's pretty incredible when we think of what the participation was before. And Rudy was one of the students, all the kids in this class liked CSR, but he really loved it. If he saw me in the hallway and knew I was coming to watch the class or to help with the class that day, he would say, "Oh, Miss, is it going to be a CSR day?" It was a day where he really felt comfortable because he knew how the lesson was going to run and he knew that he was going to be able to participate successfully. So let's look at some of the question types. I do think it's always nice to be able to practice them. So I'm going to read to you, but it's on your screen, and you may want to refer to this reading as we practice some of the question types. So this is a reading from Time for Kids called "What's That Smell?" Have you ever remembered something with your nose? Maybe the smell of hot dogs gets you daydreaming about being at a baseball game. Or the smell of burnt marshmallows reminds you of a night around a campfire. Scientists know that the sense of smell can trigger powerful memories. Wouldn't it be cool to somehow bottle those memories? That's exactly what perfumer Mark Cranes tries to do. His company, Demeter Fragrance, makes more than 200 scents. Imagine every smell in the world as a musical note, Cranes told Time for Kids. We try to combine those notes to make a melody. He has created perfumes inspired by Play-Doh, thunderstorms, and even earthworms. So an example of a right there question, remember that one is the question, the answer is right there in the text, is according to the author, baseball might remind you of what smell? And the answer is the smell of hot dogs might remind you of baseball. And if you see, you can look right here, and the part that's highlighted is maybe the smell of hot dogs gets you daydreaming about being at a baseball game. And one tip for kids who might have a difficult time coming up with questions at first is you might just give them a couple of sentences and practice converting those sentences into a question. A think and search, so that's a synthesis question. You're going to have to look in different parts of the text. How did the scientists and perfume makers work together? Well, scientists know smells are related to memories, and so the perfume makers decided to make those scents into perfumes you can buy. So they helped each other, and you can see this information is contained in several sentences in the text. For an author and you, that's the one that's in your head and in the text. This was a question that was written by a student in connection to a language arts unit where the essential question was related to persuasion. So they were reading a lot of different texts about how people persuade each other to do things. And so the question was, what would persuade you to buy a memory perfume? And so once you've learned about these memory perfumes, then you have a better idea of how you might answer the question. So you don't necessarily use the text completely, but you use that background knowledge that you've developed in order to formulate your answer. And teachers can ask kids pointed types of questions, like for one of your questions today, see if you can link to our essential question. Or they could also give kids a question starter that's related to, and I'm going to flip ahead just to show you real quick. Whoops. Looks like I lost my question starters. Apologize for that. In our resources, there are, and in the flipbook that kids use, there is a whole sheet of question frames. So these are frames that kids can kind of fill in that would prompt them to write a compare and contrast type question. Or there's one that sort of says something like, how are blank and blank the same? And those question frames are used quite frequently by kids, especially in the beginning. And we have them translated into different languages because we have so many kids who also speak Spanish. On our flipbooks, we have them translated into Spanish and English. And one of the things I notice quite frequently are kids who speak English and Spanish will look at the question frames, the question starters in Spanish for a while, and then they will be able to write their question in English. So being able to go back and forth between languages can be very helpful. So Robert is asking, the last question could be answered without reading the text. Are these types of questions ideal? The idea with the author and you is that there are connections to the text. So you're right, it is possible that you could answer, you know, what would persuade you to buy a memory perfume without reading the text. But the idea is that you would have a better answer that's based on some kind of evidence from what you just read. But you have to be the judge. If kids are starting to write, you know, kind of wacky questions that really don't seem very related to what they're reading, then you might either give them a couple of sentence frames or question frames to start with, or for a while you might say, you know what, let's just skip the author and you. But what author and you are good for are inferencing and connection type questions. You just want to make sure you're distinguishing with them what's in the text and what's outside. I want to remind you of the question expert card. So this is the card that's going to be used to guide kids through the questions. If you look on the top, it says, the question expert will guide the group in coming up with questions that address important information from the reading. So that piece is key, this idea of focusing on important information and not just any old information. So we don't want a question that says, who wrote this? Because everybody knows that, you can read it right on top. So it's got to be a little bit deeper than that. And you can push kids to get there. They check to see that all students write questions and answers. And they make sure that students ask each other different types of questions. So on one side of the cue card, it's going to give you those question types. And on the other side, it's going to give you some discussion suggestions. So you might say, you know, oh, Allison, please ask the group your best question. Who can answer the question? And then there is a prompt, use textual evidence to explain your thinking. And after a while, these cue cards are really nice when kids are just getting up and running with the strategies to help them remember the steps of the process and to give them some cues of what they might say to spark discussions. And after a while, they really don't need the cards as much. But if you see your kids really aren't engaging in deep discussions, you probably want to direct them back to those cards because that can help. So let's take a minute. I think we have a minute to do this. And this was a section that we read before. So take up a minute just to read this section 2 from Earth Friendly Fabrics and write one question and put it into the chat feature. And after your question, tell us what kind it is. Is it a right there, a think and search, or an author and you? And I would love for everybody to do that, and I'll give you about 3 minutes to read this or skim this reading and come up with a question. So go ahead and do that right now, and then we'll come back together and talk about them. So we have a couple of right there questions coming up, which are great. Why are cotton plants smothered with noxious chemicals? And to keep away bugs and weeds, someone answered, thank you. And in what kinds of products do petroleum-based materials appear? And then we see the answer, exercise clothes, shoe soles, plastic zippers, etc. And another right there question, how have companies overcome the reliance on petroleum? So the reason I asked you to write these was not just to, to practice writing the kinds of questions your kids are going to be writing, of course. But another thing is to see how this process can actually help you process and remember what it is that you just read about. So you can see through these questions that to come up with them, you had to do some rereading. Most of them probably weren't just sitting in your head. And to answer other people's questions, you might have to go back and reread different portions of the text that then you looked at to write your own questions. And Robert has asked, what have companies experimented with to create new fabrics that are environmentally friendly? Companies have created with substances from corn sugar recycled materials. And he's saying his was a right there, and, you know, it would take a little bit more time to create the other ones. And you're right. And one of the things that's nice is if a child writes one as a think and search and answers, has that answer, sometimes another student will answer it as a right there. But if the student is aware of the different question types, they can say, well, you only gave me one reason. For this to be a think and search question, which I was thinking, you need to give me more reasons for whatever the question is. So it's nice for them to be thinking about the question types. And yes, certainly the right there is a good place to start because they're more straightforward, and so kids can get the idea, and then they can work up to the different types. Another thing that's really great about questions is it's a wonderful place for differentiating instruction. So you can imagine that you would have kids that are good at one question type or another. So you might have one student who is asked to write one of each question type, one question of each question type. You might have another student who's just working on write their questions. You might have another student where you're giving them just a couple of sentence frames, question frames to guide them. And then you might have another student where you say, today I don't want you to look at the question starters. Today I want you to think about a question, you know, that's coming out of your head that seems important to you from the text. Don't worry about following the structures in the flipbook. So it's a really nice way to be able to have different ways for kids to engage even within their groups. But one, I was just working with some teachers on Monday, and one of the things that came up was them asking, now, do the kids write the questions together or on their own? They might write them together when they're learning, but pretty quickly you want the kids to write them on their own so they can ask them to each other. And I see a couple of additional questions that came in that are looking great and would be really helpful and are also the kinds of questions that kids are asking. So here are some questions that were from our seventh grade class from the same reading. What are three items used to make organic yarn? What's the difference between organic clothes and man-made clothes? And why might some companies not want to provide earth-friendly fabrics? So yay for the student who wrote that question, and that is a really good example of a terrific author and you question. So that is not explicitly answered in the text, but you can read the text and get information about why clothes are made the way they are and what's used, and you could get some ideas for why they might be more resistant to making clothes that are earth-friendly. Now, these bottom ones are questions that were not proficient. So these are questions that on the learning log did not have answers. So the student really didn't take the time to think about what an answer would be. They're pretty vague, and they're not particularly important. So when kids are forced to answer their questions, it helps them write a better question. And the other thing that kids do is they help each other with the wording. So if a student asks a question that's not particularly clear, the students will say, I don't understand, or wait a minute, did you mean this? And that's a really great way for them to revise their wording when they realize I asked a question but my group mates didn't understand what I was asking. So I'm going to change the wording a little bit so it's a better question. Another thing you can do is you can, these rubrics are on our website, but you could certainly create your own for whatever skills or goals you're working on, is to teach the kids to evaluate questions. So on this three-point rubric, each question and answer relates to the text. Questions refer to important information, and so that would be a place where you could provide evidence. Each question has an answer. And questions and answers are written in complete sentences. So if that's a goal, that the answers are written in complete sentences, that's one to have on there. And questions are written in the question format. So these rubrics, there's one for all, for each component of CSR, and they can be very helpful as we help kids to evaluate, and also a really nice place to personalize for the goals of your classroom. So some reminders, I just said this one, students write the questions individually and they ask to their group and discuss the answers. Students write different kinds of questions. You can differentiate as needed. And this is a great place to be creative. So as I mentioned before, question writing comes at the end of the lesson. Kids have been working really hard. Sometimes you can look around your room and you think it's time for the kids to move a little bit. You can do speed dating where the kids take their learning log and their text with them and they find someone who they haven't worked with that day and they ask a question and answer. Then the next person asks it and then they move on to another partner. And so they can kind of move around the room and ask two or three questions to different kids. You could have a question raffle where kids write their best question on an index card. And then you put it in a fishbowl or a bucket, and before leaving as an exit ticket, you could pull out two or three or four questions, or you could start the next day with those same questions as a way to review the material. So if you have any questions about questioning, feel free to ask them whenever. But that is how the questioning strategy goes. And it can be done very quickly, and it's also a nice place to adjust your timing. So if it looks like kids have spent more time reading and understanding the text with Click and Clunk and Get the Gist, you can tell your students, today you're only going to write one question. And you can specify what question, you can specify the question stem. You could say, I'd like you to write one how question or one why question, depending on the timing, or you could have them write three questions. So the review strategy is really the most straightforward, and it doesn't take a whole lot of discussion, but it is an essential piece of wrapping up the learning and also a place for the teacher to do some formative assessment. You know, are the kids understanding what I think they're understanding? So what they do is the procedure, like all the other ones, they review their learning logs, and they think about what seems to be the most important information from this passage. And then they write one or two of the most important ideas from the reading, and they're using complete sentences here. If you're working on summarizing skills or it's a longer reading, you might have them do more than one or two sentences. So that could be a little bit longer, more like a summary paragraph, depending on the text. And then they're going to share their ideas and say why your ideas are the most important, and you're going to provide evidence. And then the teacher provides a whole class wrap-up by reviewing content, making connections, and perhaps reviewing strategies if one of the strategies needs a little bit of review at that point. Another thing to think about, I don't know what kinds of technology you have available to you in your classroom, but at several of the schools we are working in now, I have one-to-one Chromebooks or iPads for kids. And I have seen a lot of teachers with the review have kids type their reviews into a Google form. And then it populates a spreadsheet so the whole class can see the different review statements that were written. And then the teacher could pick out some common threads, could talk about what's missing, could highlight one or two that would be discussed in more detail. So there's some really nice, easy ways to integrate technology into this review, really the whole CSR process, but it lends itself nicely to review. So let's watch this same group that we saw with questions, and they are going to be reviewing what they read. a couple things to notice with that. I love how the students really seem to be getting into the content of the reading. So they're talking about what was important in the text, and then they also talk about what was important to them. I hope you noticed in the beginning that the teacher was saying to them, when you're writing your review statements, I want you to write what was most important in the text, not what was most important for you. And the reason she was doing that is she had noticed that kids were really picking out facts that they thought, like, you know, we call them fun facts sometimes. So things that seemed cool or were interesting to them. But she really wanted to make sure that they were synthesizing what was in the text. But then in their discussion, after they did that and they provided the evidence for why it was important, then they could also say, well, this was really, you know, especially meaningful to me. And I think it was nice for them to be able to have that chance to do that, and you see that a lot. Another thing I wanted you to notice is that the teacher came into the end of the discussion there, and the kids did not stop talking. So you can see that a norm has been created in this class, that the student conversations are valued, and that the teacher doesn't come in and interrupt every time. So sometimes we have a tendency as teachers to overteach when kids are in groups. And it's really important to listen first. And if the discussion is on track and the kids are having, you know, good information is being shared and kids are participating, there isn't a need for the teacher to interrupt or to do any teaching at that moment. And what she does is sit down and become a member of the group and just listens. And I think it's nice to see this teacher doing that here in the video. So I just wanted to point out on the cue cards where the discussion happens for review. And there isn't a special reviewer role because it really is pretty quick that review happens in just a couple of minutes with kids, and then it goes back to the teacher. So the leader is the one who runs the preview part where the kids are participating and also runs the review part. So I've circled here that the leader might say something such as, okay, now it's time to review. Use the text to explain your thinking. And then everybody will write down their review statements, and then a discussion follows. In the whole class wrap-up, just as the teacher sets the purpose at the beginning of reading, it's nice for the teacher to wrap up with the purpose at the end. So he or she might ask students to share review statements. They might provide a quick summary, connect to the learning objectives, or follow up with a short activity that focuses on going deeper into the content. Sometimes we have, for example, in science, a science teacher will have students do some background reading prior to conducting a lab experiment on something. So that could be a follow-up activity. We talked just through most of these. Creating a concept map, providing additional information. You understand what I mean when I'm talking about reinforcing the content. And then reinforcing the strategies. So you might notice that kids need a little bit more support on gist writing, and you might follow up with a mini lesson, or perhaps quite a few students were struggling with one clunk and you want to discuss it in more detail. That's something that you could stop the kids between sections if you wanted, or you can wait to the end to have those extended conversations. I think it's important to have kids review their learning logs before handing them in to be sure that they feel good about the work and that it's high quality. Sometimes when kids finish really quickly, it's because they rushed and they didn't go through all of the steps, so they might want to go back and review. I think it's really nice to grade or provide feedback on the learning logs, but you may not want to look at the entire thing. So you may tell students, choose your best question. That's the one I'm going to grade tonight, or I'm going to provide feedback on. Or which gist do you think really captured the most important information of the section? Circle that one, and that'll be the one I'll give you feedback on tonight. You may be familiar with a fun activity called Numbered Heads Together. This is a way to reinforce understanding. You might use questions that students have generated, and then you can pick a number of students, so 1, 2, 3, or 4, and then however many tables you have. And then that person might be responsible for answering the question. But prior to telling them who is the one who's going to have to ask the question, everybody has to prepare it together. So you ask the question, everybody works together in their groups to come up with an answer, and then you might have clunk experts are the ones who have to answer, or seat 4 at table 5 have to answer. But the idea here is that the kids continue to collaborate and work together to come up with that answer, and everybody is responsible for participating. That's just one of the many activities you can do afterwards. And you can review that one later. So we have now learned all of the CSR strategies from preview to review. And you are ready, if you haven't done it already, to have your kids begin to work through all the strategies in one cycle that can take about a class period. So what I wanted to do for the last few minutes was just to give you, you know, a few hints. These are things that probably you're familiar with but might be helpful to you about how cooperative learning works with CSR. And another thing that it would be great for you to think about is we have one more session, and it's coming up on December 3rd. And I really want to know what I can give you more information about. So my idea is, to do a Q&A on wrap-up, and I can certainly talk about ways to deepen discussion, the quality of discussion, and the quality of students' strategy use. But if there were particular areas that you wanted me to talk more about, I'd love to hear if you want to know more about integrating kids with disabilities or integrating kids who are above grade level or English learners, more strategies for fine-tuning a particular component. You can let me know through the chat feature or even by sending an email, and I will certainly plan to talk about those on December 3rd. But now on to cooperative learning. There are lots of different reasons and ways that kids can work together, and many of those ways have different values and different goals. So when we're talking about cooperative learning, we're talking about kids strategically placed in groups. For CSR, these are heterogeneous or mixed ability groups. Each member has a role that's assigned, and the group task is very specific, so kids know what they're doing and why. Each individual is responsible for his or her own learning and the learning of the group, so kids really are encouraged to help each other. And students are, the goal here is that they're able to do more, to think better and more deeply than they could if they were working on their own. Occasionally, I will walk into a CSR class, and I will see the kids in tables, and they are working in groups, but I can't immediately recognize that the groups are adding to their learning any more than if they were doing it themselves. So in order for the groups to add to each other, there really has to be more than just sharing of ideas, but giving each other feedback, helping each other learn, really listening and developing those academic discussion skills that we know are so important in school and in life. So here's how it looks. Once the kids have learned the CSR strategies, they're going to be seated in heterogeneous groups of about 4. I prefer 4. Some teachers use 5. It's up to you. To me, 4 seems like a good number. And one reason is you can get the kids sitting in a way where they really face each other nicely and they can talk with each other. It takes a little bit longer also to share and discuss when you have 5 if everybody is participating. So to me, I would rather have some groups of 4 and some groups of 3. If my numbers are uneven, then I would like to have groups of 5. You will predetermine those groups. So the kids do not choose their own groups most of the time in CSR, and you can use language scores, reading scores, benchmarks, any information that you have on the students. Of course, you want to look at personalities and who are your leaders, who works well together, that sort of thing. Everybody is assigned a role, and you don't want to take a long time with this. So when you walk in the class, the kids should see what group am I in and what's my role, and then it's done. You don't want to waste a lot of time choosing groups, choosing roles. You want to get right into the reading. Then the teacher is going to guide the groups through the preview. And when it's time to read, the leader starts. They begin by asking someone in the group to read. And reading, as we have discussed, is generally done out loud in the small groups. And then the other kids begin to perform their guiding roles. When the students have completed their small group wrap-up, the teacher brings the class back together and does that brief whole group wrap-up. I can tell you from experience that sometimes teachers run out of time for the review. And it's really important to have that wrap-up at the end where kids can ask and answer questions and where they can review what they've learned. I sometimes tell teachers to set their timers for 15 minutes before the period is over, whatever period you have designated for CSR if you're in elementary school. And at 15 minutes, you tell the groups, finish what you're doing, read to the end of the text, and begin your questions. That's a way to help move kids along so you can ensure that they have the time to do questions and review. It's great to have just a few simple rules when kids are in CSR groups. Here are the ones I like to use, and I'd love to hear if you end up using different ones, what they are. Number one, talk only to the members of your group. So unconditional. You're not going to be leaning around and talking to other kids and messing around. You're going to be talking only to the members of your group. And if you use the GPS role, that person could help with that. You're only going to talk about CSR, so you don't want kids to get way off track. They may make connections to the reading, which is okay, but they've got to stay on task. And if you've got the leader or someone else monitoring the time, that's a really nice way to help kids stay on task because they know they've got quite a bit of work to do to get to the end of the lesson. Kids need to be talking quietly when they're in their group. So you may have library voices, you may have level zero, which is no talking, one is very quiet, two is presentation, and three is outdoor voices or something. So whatever your way of designating, then if the kids start to get a little bit too loud, you can remind them to go back down to level one or go back down to six-inch voices. And this one I think is important. When you have a question, have the leader raise his or her hand to get help from the teacher. So you don't want all the kids asking questions all at once, and you also want them to start to work out the answers on their own before asking you. So what's next for us? You're going to log into that CSR toolkit if you haven't already, and try the wrap-up in your classroom. If you have time, we have a couple weeks, but we have Thanksgiving in between, so I know it's a busy time. You might want to try to put an entire CSR lesson together. It would be great for you to try that and then let us know how it goes. Or you can take some time to work with the kids on questions and review. Depending on your students, there is a questioning lesson that's in the toolkit. And I'll show you where it is. So under Classroom Resources, there's Strategy Intro Lessons. You'll find the questioning lesson. Many teachers like to teach the questions and really need to teach the questions on separate days. It's a lot for kids to handle to learn all three question types at once. So I suggest that you introduce, you know, you might tell them we're going to be asking a lot of different kinds of questions, but if you are going to use those three question types we talked about today, you might want to introduce the right there on one day, and then the think and search on another day, and then the author and you on a third day. Of course, you can decide how to do that if you're using what, when, where, why, and how type questions. you can also limit. You know, let's just start with a what or a how or a what or a when question, so that you can really focus in. You also want kids to be able to give each other feedback. Is this really a think and search question? What evidence do I have from the text that information comes from more than one place? So you'll go to those intro lessons to introduce, and I'm flipping back on my slides just to remind you that if there's anything you want to review, either in the questioning and review or in any other part of CSR that we've talked about, we have the self-paced modules online. And there is also a module on collaboration. So if you want to get a little bit more information since you're getting ready to put everything together, that collaboration module has a lot of nice information for you. And if you have any questions, please feel free to ask them. Otherwise, I will see you on December 3rd, or we will connect virtually on December 3rd for our final CSR session. And remember, if there's anything specific that you would like me to address, I am happy to do that. You can tell me now or at the beginning of that next session. And I hope everybody has some time to try CSR in the classroom and has a wonderful Thanksgiving break.
Thank you so much, Dr. Boardman. I'm going to post the link to the evaluation. And if it doesn't look like anybody's typing, but we'll give it a minute, see if there's any questions. And we do look forward to seeing everybody back on December 3rd. And Dr. Boardman, if you want to hang out for a second, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, you got it.